for Konica. As I mentioned earlier, Konica is the manufacturer of about 75% of the CoQ10 that's consumed around the world. And they're also the exclusive manufacturer of ubiquinol, the new reduced form of coenzyme Q10. And most of the, just about all of the CoQ10 that we consume here in the United States is actually manufactured in Konica's new plant down in Texas. So it's a Japanese company, but the CoQ10 is U.S. made. And what Dr. Barry does, he's, as I said, Director of Scientific Affairs. He's in charge of research and development. He formulates new products. And I said to him, what does a Director of Scientific Affairs do? It's a nice title, but what do you do? Actually, what he really does, he spends a lot of time devising and supervising clinical trials. You know, Konica is one of the few nutrient companies that's putting dollars behind research, not just basic research, clinical research, where they take people and they divide them in groups and they do double-blind studies with coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol. And that's what Dr. Barry does. He supervises that type of work. So in addition, he's an excellent speaker, and he can make all this information about CoQ10 very, very understandable. So, I'd like to introduce Dr. Bob Barry.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me okay? All right. Well, first of all, I want to thank Wilner Chemist. I'm sorry? That better? Both? All right, I'll try. I don't know if I can keep it up for the whole talk. I'd like to thank Wilner Chemist for inviting us here. Pretty amazing, 100 years. I assume all of you are customers of Wilner. Oh. This isn't going to be easy. Anyways, I'm here to talk about coenzyme Q10. If I could figure out how to use the benefits of coenzyme Q10. But specifically, what I'll be talking about is giving you some information and some comparisons on conventional coenzyme Q10. It's probably a coenzyme Q10 that you've been familiar with for the past 30 years or so, and a fairly new product, which is called ubiquinol, which is also coenzyme Q10, but it's the reduced form, and I'll go into what that means in a few minutes. How many of you are familiar with coenzyme Q10? All right, how many of you are familiar with ubiquinol? Oh, great. Any questions? actually, what I'm going to do is, since this is also basically an introduction on ubiquinol, ubiquinol is fairly new. It's the reduced form of coenzyme Q10. When I say fairly new, it's been commercially available for only about 3.5 or 4 years. Konica had ubiquinol for over a decade before that, and they researched it, did clinical trials, both animal and human clinical trials that were required by the U.S. FDA before it was made commercially available here. There was also a number of studies that were done at medical schools, both in Japan and in the U.S. And by the way, it is U.S. made as well. So what I'm going to do is go through with you some of the early studies, and I'll let you decide if there's a significant difference between ubiquinol and conventional coenzyme Q10. Since you're all familiar with coenzyme Q10, you probably don't need the first slide because you know what it's famous for. Basically for the production of energy. It is a key component in our mitochondria, and you're probably familiar with because you all seem pretty well educated. I spoke with a number of people here during the breaks, but you're probably familiar with the fact that ATP is the fuel that runs our cellular systems. Well, the majority of that, 95% of that, is produced in the mitochondria. And in every cell in our body, there's anywhere from 100 to thousands of mitochondria. That means that in our body, there's trillions and trillions of mitochondria. And ubiquinol is a critical component of that. If ubiquinol is not present, if that electron is not transferred to coenzyme Q10 to make it into ubiquinol, which then transfers it on to make, that helps facilitate the production of ATP, we wouldn't be around very long. Second, what's here is, as I mentioned before, ubiquinol is, of course, to reduce formin. It's a lipophilic antioxidant. Actually, it's one of the strongest lipophilic antioxidants that's biosynthesized. What's not indicated here, what you don't see for a bullet, is that CoQ10 and ubiquinol's function in the mitochondria isn't just for ATP production. As ubiquinol, as I just mentioned, it's a very strong lipid-soluble antioxidant. You're probably familiar with oxidation, oxidative damage, free radicals, and that type of thing. The majority of the free radicals in our body are generated in the mitochondria. Now, granted, a very small amount of free radicals are required for regular metabolism, growth, and development of all of our cellular systems, but it's the errant and excess free radicals that really cause the damage. So there's a redox balance. When we're young and healthy, say in our teens or early 20s, the predominant form of coenzyme Q10 in our bodies is the reduced ubiquinol form. The best way to think about it is, as I mentioned before, I guess you're all pretty much familiar with oxidative stress or oxidative damage and what that does to proteins, lipids, and DNA in our system. Is anyone familiar with that, oxidative stress, oxidative damage, and that type of thing? Well, okay, we have one person. basically, that's what happens as we age. We become oxidized. We start to rust, and that continues. It doesn't get better as we get older. What most people don't think of, though, is that the oxidative state is associated with aging and age-related diseases. But when I ask them, well, then what's the opposite? What's the healthy state? And I usually draw a blank. The healthy state is a reduced state. And that's why ubiquinol is so important. It helps to reestablish the ubiquinol levels, not just in our plasma, but in all of our cells. And where does all this take place? This is I just put this up because I kind of like the graphic. But you can see where the Q is between 1 and 3, complex 1 and 3. There's also a complex 2 that's not shown here. That's where coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol reside, and that's called the electron transport chain in our mitochondria and is responsible for ATP production. But where does all this happen? That's why I show the next one. This is a small snapshot of what's going on in nearly every cell in our body. I'm sure you're all familiar with this. You probably saw it in high school or college biochemistry course and probably have it all memorized already. But the reason I put it up here for two reasons. First of all, to show you just how complex the machinery is. This is what's going on every second, minute, day, decade. Whether you're 20 years old, 20 days old, or 80 years old, this has been going on in every cell in your body. What you should get the impression of is that, well, just like your car, how efficient is your car after it's 10 years old, or 20 years old, or 50 years old, or how many of you have cars that are 80 years old? The idea is that, yes, some of this diminishes. The efficiency of the metabolic system diminishes. But the other reason I put it up here, if you were to take any quadrant here, and unfortunately it doesn't come up very clear, and if there's an error, in metabolic error in any one of these quadrants, you can literally go through the system here and find that there's either primary, secondary, or tertiary effects way over on the other side of the picture here. So it's all linked together. What's literally the difference between coenzyme Q10? I'll call it conventional coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol. We also call ubiquinol QH, so maybe to minimize confusion, I'll refer to it as QH as well. And structurally, if I could figure out how the pointer works here. Okay, I can't, so I'll just point. All right, maybe I shouldn't do that. Basically, the only difference are these two electrons between conventional coenzyme Q10. This is the only structure I'm going to show you guys. The one up on top is conventional coenzyme Q10, and the one on the bottom is ubiquinol. The only difference are the two hydrogens here, which represent the two electrons. The best way to look at this, and usually the way I explain it is, I assume that most of you are familiar with vitamin C and vitamin E, and you know that they're good antioxidants. Each one of those is the reduced form. Wilner Chemist, nor would any other store ever sell the oxidized form of vitamin C or vitamin E, and you would never buy the oxidized form of vitamin C. If you were to take your vitamin C pill and put it on the table tonight, tomorrow morning, it'll be brown. That's the oxidized form. Same thing with vitamin E. If you were to put it out within a day or so, it would be rancid. That's the oxidized form. The difference is of course, they're regenerated in our body, and so is coenzyme Q10. Ubiquinol is responsible for the regeneration of, at least to a significant part, of vitamin C and vitamin E in our body. As you can see in the red there, and I'll emphasize this throughout the short talk, is it's the major form in a healthy body. For all of you out there that are 18, 19 years old, and looks like the majority of the people here, and are, because obviously you've been taking your Ubiquinol. Literally, when you're young and healthy, the coenzyme Q10 that's in your plasma, and that should be in your plasma right now, should be over 90% Ubiquinol. And that's the same for most of the tissues and organs in our bodies. It's a biochemical fact. Much of this hasn't been emphasized because Ubiquinol has not been commercially available. So therapeutically, it really couldn't be addressed. But anyways, that's the small difference. One of the things I should mention is that, as I mentioned earlier, Konica had this for over a decade and studied it for that period of time before they made it commercially available. And quite honestly, 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago, what we considered Ubiquinol to be is maybe, once we did all the studies on it, is a nice next generation coenzyme Q10. A little bit better in terms of its antioxidant activities over conventional coenzyme Q10, but basically just a nice next generation product. And we were very wrong. What I'm going to show you is some of the early studies that done that tipped us off that there's not a slight difference between the two. There's a very dramatic difference between Ubiquinol and conventional coenzyme Q10. There's a very dramatic metabolic and physiological effect. Basically, as I mentioned before, what's the difference? One of my sons asked me years ago, well, how can you tell which one is which if we had it on the table here? That was actually a pretty good question. This is conventional coenzyme Q10. It's a bright orange crystalline solid. If you add the two electrons, then it's off-white in color. And again, if you were to leave it out on the table tonight, tomorrow morning, that's what it would revert to. And that's what the majority of you would probably have been taking up until a year or so ago. Now, granted, you know, coenzyme Q10 has a very significant history in terms of health benefit. There's thousands of publications worldwide on coenzyme Q10 and its health benefits for cardiovascular, for neurodegenerative, for diabetes, a number of different areas. Part of that is because we do regenerate and convert conventional coenzyme Q10 to ubiquinol readily in our bodies when we're young and healthy. As we age, the efficiency of that conversion diminishes, and that's very significant, you'll see as we look at some of the studies. Some of the studies I'm going to show you, I'm not going to go through in detail, but just to give you a picture, an idea of what's been done with Ubiquinol so far. Basically, this picture just shows you, if you just look at the bars there, and again, I'm not going to go through a lot of these in detail, just to show you that this is one among hundreds of publications that show the predominant form of coenzyme Q10, not just in us, but in other mammals as well, when they're healthy, is the ubiquinol form, not the oxidized coenzyme Q10 form. The reason I put this up here is you're probably wondering, or at least one of the questions should be, well, then why was it only available in the last 3 or 4 years? Why wasn't it available 30 or 40 years? In fact, if it was available 30 or 40 years, I wouldn't be giving this talk now. Just like with vitamin C and vitamin E, there would be no discussion. It would just be the reduced form that would be available. The reason for it is what I alluded to earlier in terms of it's very sensitive to light and air oxidation. That's why if you were to put it out on the table tonight, tomorrow morning, it would be reverted back to conventional coenzyme Q10. Konica was able to develop the technology to stabilize it, especially in bulk, so that it could be utilized. Basically, what I do with Konica is initiate and help to manage clinical trials, as Arnie had mentioned, but not at Konica. The majority of them are conducted at major universities and medical centers. There's a number of them being done here at Columbia and Cornell, also Harvard, Children's Hospital in Cincinnati, and in Boston, Mayo Clinic. So it's not necessarily just done by Konica. The reason I put this up here is you may also think that ubiquinol is new. Ubiquinol is new to you as a consumer. For scientists, they've known about ubiquinol as long as they've known about CoQ10, since 1957 when it was discovered at the University of Wisconsin by Dr. Crane. The reason you haven't heard much about it is because it hasn't been commercially available. One of the researchers out of Stanford came back to me because I showed him, I'm going to show you a video in a little bit, and that's the one that tipped us off to ubiquinol being dramatically different and better than coenzyme Q10. I'll show you that, and then you'll realize why. But a couple of weeks after this, this particular researcher called me up, actually the head of the department in a major medical center, and said, you know, most consumers won't realize this, but most scientists, biochemists that certainly work in the areas that I mentioned before, cardiovascular, neurodegenerative diseases, bioenergetics, et cetera, will realize that up until a few years ago, there wasn't enough ubiquinol available anywhere to do a clinical trial on two people. Now it is certainly worldwide and has been for about a half a dozen years now. The reason I say half a dozen years is because we did make it available to researchers prior to making it commercially available. And the reason I put this up here is to emphasize that. If you read what's in red up here, and I can't read it because I don't have my glasses on, but basically I know what it said is that in the past 3 decades, information on the antioxidant properties of ubiquinol. But what you should look at is the date down below, 1990, and this was done by Bruce Ames at Berkeley in California. So just to let you know that ubiquinol is not new to researchers, just currently available. With this particular slide and the next series of slides will just be examples of ubiquinol being predominant in our systems and the efficient conversion of conventional coenzyme Q10 when we take conventional coenzyme Q10 to ubiquinol. This particular study is in a cellular system. It's called CaCO2 cells, and it represents a human intestinal model. And basically what these bars show you is that when you supplement with coenzyme Q10, it's readily converted to ubiquinol. And again, these are in healthy cells. This next slide shows 2 separate studies. And again, they are separate studies, but they're good for a comparison, and the trend between the two has been consistent since these were published. And basically, this shows the difference in terms of bioavailability. On the left, you see Konica QH, which is ubiquinol, and they're both at the same series of dosages. But at the highest dose, at 300 milligrams, what you see is a plasma concentration of between 6 and 8 micrograms per mil. In a similar population, up to 900 milligrams a day of conventional coenzyme Q10 is less than half of that. As we age, and if you happen to suffer from chronic or acute disease, that goes down significantly. I'll show you in a few subsequent slides here on some diseased individuals that no matter how much coenzyme Q10, conventional coenzyme Q10 they were given, the conversion to ubiquinol just wasn't efficient enough to result in a health benefit. And this is basically what I've mentioned to date so far in terms of older individuals. First of all, we make less coenzyme Q10. But the critical factor isn't that we make less coenzyme Q10. What's very significant, again, and I'll emphasize this throughout, is the efficiency of the conversion in our cells, in our bodies, from conventional coenzyme Q10 to ubiquinol diminishes significantly as we age. And when I say as we age, what does that mean when you're 60 or 70? Actually, studies show that it starts in the 20s. Very significant difference in the 40s, but it actually starts in your 20s, and it progresses slowly from there on. In this particular slide, and again, I won't go through them in detail, but it just gives an example of the difference. On top, this is for diabetes. And the number that you see here is, and you can see in red what was done, and just what I had stated a few moments ago, that ubiquinone intake, conventional coenzyme Q10, did not increase plasma ubiquinol percentages at all in these people with diabetes. The number that you're looking at there is the ubiquinol level at 93 to 95%, which is a normal, healthy person. But you can see in the next part of the slide there, which is 43 and 41. That's a slightly impaired fasting glucose, and then at the end is a full-blown diabetes. And you can see what a significant difference there is. They're in a very heavy oxidative state, depending on the level of the disease. The reason I put different examples of liver disease down below that is just to show you that it's not particular just to diabetes. It is also specific for cardiovascular disease and neurodegenerative diseases. But you can see that the differences in percentages aren't that great. Well, we found that in terms of clinical outcome, it could be a very slight difference. It doesn't have to be a dramatic difference between those numbers in order to show clinical effects. This shotgun blast that you see on this particular side is actually a pretty nice little study that was done on 120 or so healthy individuals. And you can see what the ages are in the box above that shotgun blast there. It's 25 years old, 50 years old, and 70 years old. Basically, what this is showing is that line that's going up is showing that overall their oxidative state is increasing. So what does that mean? The reduced state is decreasing the older we get. On this next slide, I just wanted to give an example, and this was a study or results of a study that was done on Down syndrome kids. It's not specific for aging. Again, as I mentioned before, if you suffer from acute or chronic disease, and it's very directly shown in this the results of this particular study, what those bars represent is that, and again, I won't go through it in detail, is that the Down syndrome kids suffer from a very heavy oxidative state, and these are 10, 12, 14-year-old kids. Now, they don't know if that's causative or a result of the study, but it's very characteristic of these kids. What I should mention is that in almost all of these slides that I'm showing you, it's a direct comparison of ubiquinol to coenzyme Q10. And you could read what the summary down at the bottom is that over 80% of these kids were brought up to a normal redox level with ubiquinol. What's very significant about this is two things. There's no pharmaceutical, there's no therapeutic, and even though they've tried for years and years just to correct this redox imbalance, that's been able to do that. Just as importantly, the studies done just before this were with conventional coenzyme Q10, and again, didn't do a thing. When they used ubiquinol, they didn't expect to see any difference. In fact, when they were about two-thirds of the way through on this study, the FDA and NIH stopped the study and asked them to go directly into phase 2 clinical trials for efficacy using ubiquinol, and they're conducting that study currently. So again, a very dramatic metabolic difference between conventional coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol. What this next slide shows you, again, is basically the same thing, is that dosing. And this was with rats. And you can see what the age groups are, 5, 54, 62 weeks. Very roughly, that corresponds to 7, 45, and 51 years old. In the red, what you could see is the result when they were supplemented with conventional coenzyme Q10 in terms of ubiquinol level. Remember, it's supposed to be 90 percentile or better. No matter how much coenzyme Q10, conventional coenzyme Q10 they were given, and especially the older they got, the less and less ubiquinol was they found in their system. But when they were supplemented with ubiquinol, even though it's down slightly, it's still up and up to optimal levels. Again, that doesn't happen with conventional coenzyme Q10. This next slide, and I think this is the last one of these type of slides that I'll show you, but basically it just emphasizes what I mentioned before. DT diaphorase is an oxidoreductase. It's an enzyme that helps to reduce conventional coenzyme Q10 to ubiquinols in our body. And ubiquinol isn't just in our plasma or mitochondria. It's in every cellular compartment. That's where it gets its name, ubiquitous. And there's different enzyme systems that help to reduce it throughout our body, and this is one of them. Basically, what this shows, again, is that as we age, the efficiency of that conversion in this particular enzyme goes down significantly. Remember what I said about the 80-year-old car? And there was one more. This has to do with neural cells, which have a tough time, even when we're healthy, of converting it to ubiquinol. And this emphasizes that as well, as that no matter how much conventional coenzyme Q10 was given in this system, it was not converted efficiently to ubiquinol. But when supplemented with ubiquinol, they were able to replenish optimal levels. There was also this study, this next one that I'll show you, is an actual one on humans. where it compared young to old. And young in this case is 20 to 30 years old, and old is 65 to 75 years old. Basically, what they were looking at is bioavailability, and these are healthy individuals. And you can see on the far right there the difference between conventional coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol, especially in the older individuals, is almost fivefold. Again, this is the same adult and healthy individuals. This is the small video that I want to show you. This is the study that was done, and I think it was published in 2006. Actually submitted in 2005, so it was actually conducted in 2003, 2004 in a medical school in Japan, and who are very familiar with conventional coenzyme Q10. Now, this is a study that was done on a mouse model, and that's what's indicated there, the SAMP1, S-A-M-P, one mouse. What that stands for is senescence accelerated mouse. So it's just what that says, is this is a mouse that grows old very quickly. Its lifespan is somewhere between 12 to 16 weeks. Typically, they would live to be anywhere between 3 to 4 years. But what they do is they take on all the attributes of aging within that time period. They live normally, et cetera, but they take on all the attributes of aging. So let me set the context for the study. It's a very non-invasive study. They took three groups, a control group, and then one group with it that they gave conventional coenzyme Q10, and a third group, which they gave QH, which is called a QH mouse, ubiquinol, all under the same conditions. They were allowed to, you know, run around and play every day and have fun and just live out their lives. And basically what they did was just observe them. What you're going to see is a very short video. It's about 10 or 15 seconds long. And the first mouse you're going to see, it's about 12 to 14 months old. So what does that mean? It's roughly comparable to about 90 to 100 years old. And this is the control mouse. So this didn't have any CoQ10 or ubiquinol in its chow as it was growing older here. So you'll see it in the researcher's hand. And let me go ahead and play it for you. Immediately after that, you're going to see the same age mouse that had ubiquinol in its chow. And again, that was the only difference between the two. Now, it doesn't come out full screen, but hopefully you can see it. And it's fairly short, if I can get it to go here. Okay, I'm pressing the button, but it's not going. And we had tried this earlier. It should go. I don't know what the difference is here. I'm gonna try it again. Oh, here we go. So you see it has orbital lesions, skeletal deformities. It's very patchy. It's very non-responsive. Actually, it's about ready to expire. Again, this is 90 to 100 years old. This next mouse is the exact same age. It's 90 to 100 years old. The only difference, it had ubiquinol in its chow, about 200 milligrams, would be comparable to a day. You can see it's very responsive. It's very healthy. It actually acts very much like a teenage mouse. It can go through mazes, those complex masks. Pierced ears, it's very rad. It's a cool mouse, even though it's 90 to 100 years old. But the reason I show you this is that when we saw this, we thought a mistake was made. We thought that technicians had switched the mice, this wasn't the mouse we were supposed to be looking at. So, of course, we went back and checked that, and it was repeated, and it's very real. And if you think about it, especially, in today's, in terms of the TV, videos, graphics, and everything that we see, you look at it now and it's not a big deal, but I'll guarantee you that either tomorrow or the next day, if you think about it, you'll probably come back and say, just like a number of researchers at the major medical centers here in the U.S. said to me 4 or 5 years ago, they'd call me up a couple weeks later and say, could we see that again? Because if you think about it, it's a very dramatic effect. And again, one of the groups was given coenzyme Q10. The question should be, what happened to that mouse? Actually, that mouse at 12 to 14 months looked exactly like the control mouse. And that's the reason that I put this the graph up that you see here now. They looked actually at about 12 to 14 different metabolic markers for this. But this particular graph shows the black is the control group. Any inflection to the right is a health benefit, an age benefit in terms of this mouth during the course of the study. As you can see, up until about, looks like between 5 to 6 months, both the blue, the conventional coenzyme Q10, and the red ubiquinol are pretty parallel. They're almost overlap. But then after that, there's a very significant break. What's kind of neat about that, and this is just an assumption, but and it's a very rough guess, but that corresponds very roughly to about 40 to 50 years old for humans. And you can see there's a very dramatic break there, and that the ubiquinol, which is blue, tends significantly to the right. And you can see that result, you know, just physically in the mouse that you had just seen. Again, this is a study. When we saw this, we realized there's something dramatic going on here. This is not just a nice little antioxidant. So what we did, and that's terrific if you're a mouse. You know, if you're a mouse and you can go and buy ubiquinol now, you're all set. And I assume Wilner's is pretty clean, but I'll bet they have a couple in the basement, and they're probably chomping on it there. So, of course, we gave this to a number of different researchers, and this particular study was an early one that was done by a cardiovascular group in Texas, who's very familiar with coenzyme Q10, so they wanted to look at some of their cardiovascular patients in their practice. But before they did that, and they're very familiar with coenzyme Q10 and have done studies with it before, wanted to see if there was any different in healthy people first. So what they did was just take a handful of adults, and is typically between 45 and 55 years old, but these particular people were taking 200 to 300 milligrams of conventional coenzyme Q10. Excuse me. Conventional coenzyme Q10 for 2 to 3 years, and they had followed their plasma levels during that time period. And what this shows basically is under plasma concentration, that's the highest plasma concentration that they could get recorded within a 2 to 3 year period with conventional coenzyme Q10. Again, these people are 45 to 55 years old. There were a few that were maybe 58. Then they just basically switched them to ubiquinol, exact same dose. And you can see what the difference was in the plasma levels. What's very significant about this is, as I mentioned before, and I emphasize, you know, they saw no increase in 2 and 3 years in every one of these individuals. This was within a month. And you can see just a very significant difference just in terms of plasma levels. I don't want to emphasize bioavailability too much, though. These are lipid-soluble materials, both of them. Ubiquinol is not water-soluble. It is also lipid-soluble. And so just naturally, the bioavailability and absorption is relatively limited. But you can see that it's significantly better in terms of this study. What they did next then is they wanted to take a look at their cardiovascular patients, and they decided to look at class 4 cardiovascular patients, congestive heart failure patients. If you're not familiar with the semantics, the class 4 is a very compromised patient. Literally, the prognosis is 3 to 6 months. I'm not going to read through this. You can read through it if you like. So you can see that this particular individual and a number of individuals that they tested subsequent to this study were not only very compromised, but had a very rigorous therapeutic regimen. What was really neat about this study was, of course, these were patients in their own practice. So the only variable in this study is ubiquinol. This person was already on coenzyme Q10, and they just switched it out. But what I would like to point out is two things that are down on the bottom in red. The two things that they looked at other parameters as well, but significantly was the plasma level. You can see what it was, about 1.5 micrograms per mil on conventional coenzyme Q10. But more importantly, the ejection fraction is 15%. For those of you not familiar with it, the ejection fraction is the volume of blood that's pumped with one beat of the heart. So it gives a measure of the strength of the heart. For a normal, healthy adult, it should be 60 to 65%. So this is a fairly compromised patient. So I'm certainly not going to go through the study with you, but I'll go through some of the results. And you can see on this slide what happened when they switched him, again, at the same dose, from 450 milligrams of conventional coenzyme Q10 to 450 per day of ubiquinol. And you can see what the difference is in the plasma level. But more significantly, please take a look at the ejection fraction. It went from 15% to 35 to 40%, and that's in a three-month period. What's very significant about this is that there's different forms of congestive heart failure. But what the cardiologist told me is that in this particular form of congestive heart failure, there is no pharmaceutical or therapeutic that ever provided this result. The next series of slides are on subsequent patients that, and again, these are all published studies that I've shown you in referee journals, but just to give you examples of some of their other patients, and you can see the difference, the significant increase in the plasma concentration and the ejection fraction in this particular patient. Over to the left under time where it has 11 months and going from 4 to 1, the significance of that is that this patient went from a class 4 to a class 1 during that time period on ubiquinol. And again, the only variable in this study was ubiquinol. A class 1 cardiovascular patient is probably anyone in this room who's asymptomatic. So a very significant development. And again, I want to emphasize that in these studies and in all these studies, it's a direct comparison to conventional coenzyme Q10. So you probably are starting to get an idea of what we were thinking about and what we saw when we saw the results of these studies in terms of the dramatic difference between ubiquinol and conventional coenzyme Q10. The next slide, the reason I put this up here, and again, this is, a different patient. You can see on the time above, in 5 months, went from a class 4 to a class 2. And the reason I show this is they increased the conventional coenzyme Q10 dose. Actually, it shows it here up to 600 milligrams because we thought, well, maybe there's a threshold that they're just not hitting. And if they take a higher and higher dose, then it'll trip over in terms of the conversion to ubiquinol in their plasma. It never happened. They went up to 900, 1,200, and even higher levels of milligrams a day with conventional coenzyme Q10. And again, not just in this patient, in every patient that they studied, that was in this study and was published, was the same result. But you can see what the result was when they gave them ubiquinol. So again, a very significant dramatic difference between the two. And this was part of the end of the letter, or beginning of the letter, that the cardiovascular group had sent us when they were in the middle of the study. So very significant difference between the two. And basically, that's it. I'm going to stop there. There's dozens and dozens of studies that are being conducted now, not only in cardiovascular area, but in the areas of Parkinson's, Huntington's, diabetes, as I mentioned before, Down syndrome, and many others, and most of them major medical centers. Most of them are supported and financed by NIH and FDA. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to. Yeah.
Thank you for very wonderful.
Oh, thanks. Okay. Okay. I'll repeat the question kind of in a moment. We'll use the microphone. But is it ubiquinol that you use? Ubiquinol. Basically, this young lady is a physician, and some of her patients, she mentioned one area that I did not address at all were statins. And I would guess that at least a couple of you are probably on statins. I think it's mandated in the U.S. Once you're above 30, you're automatic. I think they put it in the water now. But the problem with statins is, and even the pharmaceutical companies acknowledge it now, is that it very effectively lowers cholesterol. It just doesn't do it selectively. It not only lowers cholesterol, but it actually inhibits the same enzyme that's in the same pathway for the production and the synthesis of coenzyme Q10, which is kind of ironic because the heart is probably the most energy-demanding organ in our body and requires more coenzyme Q10 than any other organ. But when you take statins, which is to protect your heart, you're actually depleting it of coenzyme Q10. There's at least three that I could think of right now, studies that are looking at statin-induced myalgia. All of them are supported by NIH and the FDA here in the U.S. Statin-induced myalgia is the cramps, muscle aches, and that type of thing, and fatigue that's experienced for people who take statins. You're probably all of you are familiar with the commercial that was on for quite a while, and it indicated very low numbers of people who may experience myalgia. I think it was like 0.2 or 0.3%. What they don't tell you about that commercial is that that's for someone taking a statin for less than a 3-month period and a very low dose. What you're probably familiar with is that statin therapy is a long-term therapy, and it's typically supposed to be 2 to 3 years, if not for your lifetime, and typically doses are if not modified, increased. What they don't tell you is that the attrition rate for people who take statins long-term is over 80%. Again, there's a number of studies. There's a study that was published 2 or 3 years ago that actually came out of a medical school here in Long Island looking at conventional coenzyme Q10, and it alleviated statin-induced myalgia up to 38%. They're now looking at ubiquinol. But thanks for the question. Is that blood thinner, that type of thing? Coumadin? I couldn't hear you. Coumadin? One of the things that comes up all the time is, because a lot of patients are on Coumadin and blood thinners and that type of thing. Historically, there was one paper that came out, I believe it's just one, that showed that there was a contraindication between coenzyme Q10 and Coumadin. Since then, it's been repeated at least 21 times, and it's never been duplicated. The cardiovascular study, some of the results that I showed you here, in that publication, they indicate in the results section on it, they actually state that every one of the patients were on Coumadin, and even at these very high levels, they never saw any contraindication. In their past 25 years as cardiologists, they've never seen a contraindication. So that's my answer. Yes? Actually, that's a good question. She asked if there's other prescription medications, therapeutics that deplete coenzyme Q10. Actually, there's a laundry list of them. If you go online, I won't go through them here, and actually that would make a good slide. That's a good question. But there are a number of therapeutics that do deplete coenzyme Q10. One of the things I should mention is that in that cardiovascular study, the examples that I had shown, I had asked them about a year later, especially the first gentleman, the 65-year-old gentleman, I asked them, well, where is he? How's he doing? They said, oh, he's doing great. I said, yeah, but, is he still? They said, oh, yeah, he's taking ubiquinol. They were able to cut half of the therapeutics that he had been taking that you saw up there initially. And those therapeutics that he was on, they were able to cut in half in terms of dosage or a third. But I said, well, that's great, but where is he? And they said, oh, well, he's over in Ireland playing golf and visiting relatives, which six months before was absolutely unheard of. So ubiquinol is very, I think it's going to be one of the most important supplements that you can buy. Granted, it's early on. There's a lot of studies that are being conducted now. But so far, every single comparative study that's been shown of ubiquinol with conventional coenzyme Q10 shows two things. Is bioavailability is higher. In some cases, it depends on your metabolism. It depends on if you're young, healthy, older, or not. Some cases, it's very dramatic difference. In some cases, it's not in terms of bioavailability. But in every single study, and it's been very consistent, there's a dramatic difference in terms of metabolic effect and health benefit. Typically, there's studies that were done on dosage as well, and just very generally, if you don't take coenzyme Q10 at all, and you want to start with ubiquinol, published study shows that if you start with 200 or 300 milligrams a day for 2 to 3 weeks, your plasma levels plateau out, and then 100 milligram maintenance dose after that is fine. That's what the publications say. But typically, most people that take ubiquinol that I'm familiar with take 100 to 200 milligrams a day. Yeah, basically they work the same way. It's not as dramatic, though. And honestly, I can't really give a fair answer to that because I'm not familiar with any publications that have compared the two. To date, there's no formal contraindication. Well, the best thing I should tell you, and what I tell everyone when they ask questions about other therapeutics, is just check with your healthcare provider first. I mean, seriously, you really should. If you change any of your supplements in that type, or any of your therapeutics, or stop taking therapeutics, or adding anything on, whether it's ubiquinol, you should let them know. So at least they know what the profile is. Yes, sir. Okay.
For about 2 years now, and I'm doing, I'm doing 400 milligrams, I take 400 times a day.
Okay.
This is after being having a heart issue. And along with taking that, giving all the stuff to the ministry, along with the fish oil and the vitamin E, I'd like to answer this biggest question because I just came from my cardiologist.
Sure, go ahead.
And my cholesterol levels without doing any, my so-called bad cholesterol, without doing any drugs whatsoever in the line of statin drugs, just using the regular veggie slice, not only went down significantly, but along with the coenzyme 10, ubiquinol, fish oil, vitamin C, L-lysine, L-proline, I got to tell you, I'm brand new all over again. And I'm saying to this lady, you can find a way to get these slices and different things. I have my whole protocol, thank the lights, quality, and loans, and great, great bunch of people that love me. She helped educate me, and I died, of course, myself, and educated myself. All the time. I feel like that.
Okay, thank you. That commercial was brought to you by Solgar.
Hey, Don, we have to give that guy a job.
let me just make one comment, because I think our time's about up here, especially when you mentioned cholesterol. I shouldn't mention this, but biochemically at least, cholesterol is not the enemy. Oxidized cholesterol is. I mentioned a number of times that ubiquinol in your plasma, guess how it's carried? It's carried on cholesterol. Ubiquinol's function is to keep it's to keep cholesterol reduced in our plasma.
We have a few more minutes if you want to do a few more questions.
Okay.
Okay, we can do a couple more questions. Okay. Yes, sir.
I don't know.
What? I'm not. You're taking vitamin K and ubiquinol? No, not at all.
How about somebody in the back?
Okay.
Wait. I'm sorry.
You have to speak louder.
Oh, he wanted to know if it's possible to make ubiquinol as a non-soy base. Actually, Arnie could probably address that. We just make the pure material. It's the different brands that actually set the formulations for it.
Dr. Barry is correct. The ubiquinol itself comes from Conoco, and a lot of companies try and put it in a fat soluble base. And there are some companies. I don't have the information directly, but if you call the store, we'd be able to tell you that. This one, if you're concerned about a small amount of soy, we will find you one that doesn't have any soy.
Yeah, they're out there.
They're out there.
Yes. Many of them do. Actually, Conoco owns ubiquinol. the name. So a lot of the different manufacturers will use a different name for it. There's two things that you can do. On the bottle, if it's Konica material, and it should only be Konica material, there's a Konica logo, and unfortunately I don't show it in my slides here, that you can look for. You could also go on Konica, and it's spelled for you right up here, KanekaQH.com, and there's a page on there that lists all the manufacturers, all the brands that carry it.
No,
not necessarily. She just asked if it says CoQ10, it means it's ubiquinol as well. That's not correct. And in fact, in some cases, it could be confusing.
Most of the ubiquinol says QH. QH is on the label in one form or another. Usually, it's part of the name. It either says ubiquinol or QH. And that's how you know it's ubiquinol. Yes, ma'am.
Is it a blood thinner?
You want me to answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
Anything that's probably good for you has a little bit of a blood thinning effect. So if you take carrots, thins the blood a little. If you take broccoli, may thin the blood a little. You take grapeseed extract, may thin the blood a little. That's what good things do. I'm not hearing you well. The thing is, you're talking about taking medication that's a blood thinner, something like Coumadin or Plavix. Okay, then. Oh, the fact that it's a blood thinner is a good thing, not a bad thing. If it is, it doesn't thin it significantly. It doesn't thin the blood significantly. If it did, it would be a good drug for that purpose, but it's not used that way.
Yes, probably one. Right. Yes, as I mentioned earlier, ubiquinol and conventional coenzyme Q10 are lipid soluble, so it's best to take it with a meal. You know, actually, Dr. Crane, who discovered it, he used to just take it with a teaspoon of peanut butter, and it works pretty well.
Okay, one more. That gentleman.
Some of those studies are being conducted now, so it would be premature for me to indicate. But the main thing is, the first thing is the slide that I had shown previously. It does, as opposed to conventional coenzyme Q10, there's a very heavy oxidative state experience with these patients, and it brings it back up to normal levels. Now, in terms of other aspects of the disease, I really can't comment on that as of yet. Okay, thank you.